Thank you all so much for listening, and welcome to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. Today, Pat and I are excited to bring this to you. It's a dojo where we work through a list that I'm actually going to be playing in the first section of the new Tabletop Simulator League, which starts this week. So we hope you enjoy this. We put a lot of work into it. Let us know what you think about the format. It's something that we always do in tabletop games, but sometimes doesn't always convey the best in podcast form. Before we dive into that, I want to thank a few different groups and individuals. The first being the patrons who pay for the things, who keep the lights on, buy us new recording equipment, pay for our hosting. Thank you all so much. You can check that out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Next is Discount Games Incorporated, always selling things for the maximum allowed retail price. If your local game store doesn't stock Marvel Crisis Protocol or can't get what you need, be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com. And last, and certainly not least, is Muzon Minis. You can find them at MuzonMinis.com and MuzonStore.com. Purveyors of high-quality gaming accessories made by gamers for gamers. I use all of their secondary token sets for Marvel Crisis Protocol and a whole bunch of their terrain. But anyway, without any further ado, here is our episode of Tabletop Simulator List Dojo. We hope you enjoy it.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a...
As a young man, he lost his arm to a Bengal tiger in a boyhood visit to the Colosseum as Rome. His arm grew back, but Rome never recovered. He taught the sun how to speak, and the language became known as Neutronian. He spent the next millennia talking to the stars, and they dared not speak back. They simply listened. He's here today to speak with us, and today I, like the stars above, will listen to Pat Dunford. And today we're talking about a list dojo for my own personal list, heading into the Tabletop 3 Simulator League. Pat, how you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you, TT. Thank you, as always, for the wonderful introduction. Really looking forward to discussing the league with you.
Yeah, so as we covered in our last episode, the Tabletop Simulator League list submissions are due August 23rd. We do a bit of time traveling with the podcast. I think you'll have like 2 days after hearing this podcast to register. So be sure to check out all the information for that. We'll have the registration info in the podcast itself. Hopefully, though, you listened to our previous episode and you got the full information from there. We're definitely excited about the new Tabletop Simulator League. And this is going to be my... my first league for Marvel Crisis Protocol. During COVID, I've been mainly playing 40K online, and recently I've been kind of gearing up, shifting my focus away from podcast practice games and more towards let's not be horrible practice games. Maybe that's a slight exaggeration. But yeah, I'm excited to play some Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Good. I'm really glad you're joining us. I'm very excited to have you in the league. Can't wait to see you kicking ass and taking names. But we know that as this game has grown and matured, list creation has become really tricky, right? The number of characters is at an all-time high, and every month it gets higher. The number of options is incredibly diverse at this point. So where are you starting with your roster creation?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways we can start, and I'm obviously just going to give you a little insight into how I personally build a list. This is true for almost any game I play, and the first thing I'm going to identify is what is the goal of this list? And I think that's really important to highlight. If you want to head into the league and your goal is to simply play your favorite superhero and have a lot of fun, that's great. It's one of the reasons that Pat and I both love Marvel Crisis Protocol, but you're going to go through a slightly different list building process. So the first thing I identified is I would like to perform well in the league. And that, to me, the definition of performing well is I'd like to be over 500. I'd like to have as many wins as losses in a league. I would consider that a successful tabletop simulator league. I think it's important to frame that right now. I'm not passing any judgment on if you just want to play for fun. I think it's great if you go 0 for 6 in the league and you actually play in your sixth game. I think it's fantastic. As long as you're having fun and enjoying the game, that's good. But personally, I kind of want to see the practice I've been putting in, and I want to, again, over 500, a winning record would be a phenomenal result.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be really great. I've never heard the term over 500 before. What's that from?
It's a baseball term, which I guess is...
That's why I've never heard it. Last time
when I said punt, right? And punt is obviously... So 500 applies to like batting average. At least that's what it means to me. Like no one hits that high. Like, I don't know, Tony Gwynn was a good hitter, but now we're... we're way off the rails. We've jumped the shark. So I personally then took that information and I started identifying models and cards that I thought were strong enough in the game that I could build a roster around. And I don't know if this is how you approach it, Pat, but that's where my mind went. And the short list that I ended up coming up with was Thanos, Ronin, Wakanda Forever, Doomed Prophecy, Corvus and Proxima, and MODOK. So that's a short list of cards that I personally thought were kind of strong enough to build a roster around. What do you think there, Pat? Is that how you approach things?
So it's similar, right? This, for me, your list is interesting because it echoes the conversation we had on last week's podcast where I identified specific pairs of characters plus team tactics cards that, in my mind, put certain affiliations ahead of others. And your short list is very reminiscent of that, right? It has some of the same inclusions and a few others that are a bit different. But I really agree on the premise, which is that really effective rosters come from combining different elements together. It's not just enough to take individually powerful characters. You need to have some synergy in mind as well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of paramount. So looking through this roster, obviously, I did some testing, right? But I'm going to start with Ronin. So when I first saw Ronin, and in my first couple games, I thought Ronin was incredible. And we joked about it, right, that Ronin might be the best part of Guardians of the Galaxy. But I don't think he's strong enough to build a roster around, if that makes sense. Ultimately, what it comes down to is he's going to move at you. He's going to judge you, which is not fun. And he's going to hit you with an 8-dice attack. And I hope that the 8-dice attack has a lot of value behind it, because he's probably going to make between 2 and 3 of those a game. Does that roughly line up with your experience with Ronin?
Yeah, I think Ronin is really cool. And I think he does quite a good job of facing off against other characters 1v1. But the problem is, as a 4-cost character, that's nothing special, right? And his best move is becoming dazed and KO'd and then walking forward and smashing someone. But that move is kind of, by definition, a move where you break even, right? Where your character is dazed, and if you're lucky, so is theirs. And so I found that Ronin is good, but I can see why he's not the kind of piece that makes you want to play with him in, well, not with him in particular. I like him. I want to include him in lists. But yeah, I can see why he's maybe not as powerful as you initially thought.
Yeah, and while I think he's a great addition to any roster, if the roster supports him, I don't think he's strong enough to be a focal point of the roster. And the idea of the other things that I listed here, I think all can be focal points, right?
Yeah, I suppose one last thing I'd say about Ronin is exactly right. He's a character that does best on his own. He's not a character that you need to focus on. He's not a character that has good synergies with other characters necessarily. And so that just goes back to what we were saying, right? Where the best options are things that support each other and synergize.
Yeah, so again, we're not saying Ronin is a bad character. I just don't think he is strong enough to build a roster around in this particular iteration. So sticking with characters, I think Corvus and Proxima are incredibly strong. And I think they are one of the few punchy answers to MODOK, is what I'll say. And we can maybe debate this now or a little bit later. So I think they deserve to stay in the list of consideration. In testing them, the biggest hurdle I've had is fitting them into affiliations, right? Because they are a 7 to an 8-point package. They want to come together. They also have like a team tactics card tax associated with them. You almost always want Rocket Boots drop off with them. So they're not always the easiest to fit into affiliations. It's kind of my high-level recap of Corvus and Proxima. But they definitely deserve to still be in this build-upon list, if that makes sense.
I agree. Another point that makes them so hard to fit in affiliations is the fact they're 2 character slots. So that immediately limits how you can build teams. If you're not playing Black Order, you need 3 affiliated characters plus them, and that pushes you into really high threat levels.
The other character I'll mention, Pat, that I think you've probably heard of is MODOK. I think MODOK is an incredibly strong dynamic piece, and when supported well, MODOK is definitely something that you can build a roster around, and he himself can win or lose you games, though he often needs the help of people around him to kind of make that happen.
Yes, agreed. I think MODOK's great. I do think he needs help, especially with early game movement, to be strong.
All right. The only other character I had in this list was Thanos. And this was a tricky one. And ultimately, I decided he wasn't someone that I wanted to build around. I'm not saying he can't be the focal point of a list. In the last after the credit scene, we talked about Thanos in Guardians, and I think that's a good place for him. I think Thanos in Avengers still is a good place for him, but I don't think it's something I want to build around, mainly because jamming Thanos in smaller point games is awkward. And I would like whatever I kind of build my roster around to be as prevalent as possible across different point values of the game. Does that make any sense, Pat?
It does. I think Thanos is great. I think you absolutely could build around him. But, I mean, we've already discussed a lot of powerful stuff, right? And you're not really going to be able to include it in every roster. So you just have to make choices about which you think is going to work out best for you or what you're most excited to play with.
So are there any other heroes you think that I should have considered here? I know that's a short list of them, but that's just kind of where my mind went initially. I am going to throw a shout out to Miles. I did consider him, and ultimately he didn't make it in just for lack of practice and repetition.
I suppose the question I've got to ask, right? You've mentioned some of the most powerful and expensive options in the game. Thor is a character who was incredibly popular in TTS Season 2. I myself use him to good success in a lot of my games in the final rounds. Have you any consideration for Thor in one of these top lists and his associated affiliation, Asgard?
I didn't put too much thought into it, to be honest with you. I've gotten a lot of games with Thor normally on the Avengers side of the fence, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I might be wrong, but the reason that Thor didn't make the list, I think Thor is a great... this sounds crazy to say. I think Thor is a great second hitter. I don't think Thor matches up great into either Corvus Proxima or MODOK is my super high level recap. And I'm open to you telling me why I'm wrong, but that's why he kind of fell off the list for me. MODOK was someone I definitely had my eye on, and I don't love a roster built around Thor trying to take MODOK down. That being said, I know that Nathan's done it very well. It just wasn't something that I felt comfortable with.
Yeah, it's very dicey, right? It depends on things like, can Thor get the stagger on MODOK with four Asgard? Can MODOK daze Thor before Thor dazes MODOK? Is Thor able to do a lot of collateral damage by throwing MODOK at people? There's a lot to that. I don't think that it's necessarily bad for Thor, but I agree with you that it's not clearly good for him either. And I think the biggest challenge with Thor versus MODOK is the fact that Thor has to put himself in huge amounts of danger to be effective, whereas MODOK can usually keep himself very safe.
And again, I guess a little bit of spoilers, like I am more than happy to consider Thor in my roster. I think for this particular thought exercise, he honestly kind of follows in the same place as Ronan. If I can fit Thor in, that's fantastic. I think having a five gives you a lot of flexibility in list building. I think he brings a lot of dynamic options to your team. He functions really well he does beat most things into the ground. It's just I didn't love the matchup into MODOK, so I didn't personally consider it.
Makes sense. So you also have two team tactics cards in your list, Wakanda Forever and Doom Prophecy. Why these two?
So at the time, let me back this up, we hadn't had the full spoilers for Blind Obsession or All You've Got when I started kind of doing this initial thought dive. Wakanda Forever, I just think, is extremely powerful. People kind of forget or sleep on Wakanda. I know that that's obviously not true for the finals of the Tabletop League, but a lot of people I play online in my pickup games or my local group, Wakanda's kind of old. It's kind of forgotten about, but that doesn't change the fact that they are still brutally efficient at what they do. And Wakanda Forever is the kind of super strong tactics card that I definitely think you could build a roster around. And this isn't by no means innovating, right? A lot of people have. And I think it deserved to be mentioned there. Doomed Prophecy is not as strong as Wakanda Forever. Let me start with saying that right off the bat. But I do think it's an underplayed card with a lot of value to it. And because it was kind of underplayed, well, it's especially like it was hardly ever used in the second Tabletop Simulator League data recap, if I remember correctly. I thought it could be a bit of a dark horse. And I thought I might be able to catch some people off guard with it if I was to build a roster that really kind of exemplified Doom Prophecy, because I still think that card has a lot of potential and a lot of power in it. And the card's only gotten better with All You've Got.
So let me tell you, I agree. And I took it in my Season 2 finals roster with exactly the same thoughts in mind. I thought, it's underplayed, I can surprise people, I can maybe use it as an answer to MODOK, And then I never took it in my five because the competition was so stiff. I think I maybe shot myself in the foot a bit because one of my main targets for it was Corvus Glaive, but I also had Rocket Boots and Drop Off. So I wasn't quite thinking that the character who needed this card most is also the character that puts the most stress on my team tactics card options. But I suppose what I'm saying is I've been burned by this card just a little bit because I thought the same thing as you, and then I never played it.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great thing to address. And if I remember correctly, you never actually got Corvus on the table either when he made your rosters, right? Proxima made an appearance, but I think Corvus just stayed on the bench.
Yeah, and I considered playing it with Zemo, but I couldn't quite bring myself to do it. I considered playing it with Venom. But yeah, it never came up.
Let's focus on Doomed, because that's actually where I personally kind of want to focus this roster. It's where I kind of ended up determining that I wanted to build a roster around Doomed Prophecy. And I think one of the keys to Doomed Prophecy, and Pat mentioned, is you need multiple characters that make really, really good benefit out of Doomed Prophecy. And at a high level, that's they have a reasonable physical defense pool. They don't mind not having a physical defense pool. And I know that's weird, but we'll get into that more later. And they have the ability to put out a lot of physical attacks. Is there anything else? And I know this isn't rocket surgery here. Is there anything else about Doomed Prophecy that you think we really should focus on there?
Yes, I think there's one more very important thing, which is they need to be in a team that has a good shot of having priority.
No, that's a great point. That is a very important point there. So,
yeah. And maybe we should just expand on that in case it's not obvious, because obviously everything that TT said, these are all ways to make the card good, right? But the reason I call out priority is because you have to use it at the start of the activation phase. If you don't have priority, you've played the card, your character has no physical defense, and they can very easily be dazed before they can actually use the effect. So if you have priority, you can play the card and immediately activate that character for maximum impact.
Yeah, and that's a great shout out to something I kind of blipped over. So I guess I'm going to bounce around a little bit. So when I first decided, when I kind of focused on Doomed Prophecy, I played. So the way this works is I played a bunch of testing games using kind of all the characters that were in that list. I kind of had like a little like notepad and I put down my thoughts on it. And I decided, okay, I want to focus on Doomed. And this may come as a shock to the listeners, but the first place I ended up with it was Avengers. It's a place I definitely have the most comfort in. It's a place I definitely have the most repetition in. And Pat, we even talked about it when we were dojoing your tabletop simulator roster in the after the credits scene, is there's some comfort in something that you're very familiar with. And I do think that there's quite a few characters within Avengers that can make pretty good use of Doomed Prophecy themselves.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think it's a little bit more than comfort. I think you're selling yourself short there, because it's not just about playing the thing that makes you feel comfortable. It's about understanding that if you have more practice with something, you have a greater understanding of it, you're going to play it better, right? And giving yourself credit for, oh, I've got all this practice with these characters, so I play them at a higher level. Maybe I can outplay my opponent. Maybe I can do things that they're not expecting. Whereas if you play something you're less familiar with, you're going to be playing it at a much more basic level.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I definitely agree with what you're saying there. So. Mm. So taking the general Avengers shell, I think it's kind of important to outline what Avengers is at its kind of minimum, right? I think that's an important thing to look at because it kind of influences what else we can kind of fit on top of it. And then I'll come back onto topic and we'll talk about how Avengers and Doomed Prophecy kind of synergize. So at its absolute cheapest, Avengers is going to come in at 9 points, right? We're going to have America's Anchor coming in at 4 points. We're going to have 2 point Widow, and we're going to have any one of our wonderful 3 point characters, right? Coming in at 9.
Yes.
I've been swayed a little bit recently, and I really like the 10-point package. And this is one of my biggest first world problem gripes with Avengers is to take a character I really love, Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I lose a character that I really like having for roster creation in Black Widow. But yes. I do really like Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., a 3-point character in Cap. That obviously raises our minimum to a 10-point roster. But I really, really like that. And to kind of come back onto target now, Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is one of those characters that makes fantastic use out of Doomed Prophecy.
Yes. I think, for my money, she is probably the best because she ticks every single box that you mentioned, right? She has multiple physical attack. She's got her pistols that do 2 physical attacks with a single action, and she's got her area 2 physical gas. And she has a way to keep herself alive, in fact, 2 ways, with stealth and parting shot. And what was your third criteria? Of course, she's got 4 physical defense. So she's adding 4 dice to those abilities.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll toss into that is Avengers Assemble is huge for that, right? It gives her that move in the middle of a big Doom Prophecy activation, so she continued just like double-tapping people with pistols. And it's important to point out, because I played this wrong in my first couple games, both of her pistols need to target the same model, so you can't take out 8 people. You could take out 4, let's say. But that's still a lot of characters.
Oh, when you say take out 4 characters, is this if you are living the dream of Doom Prophecy plus all you've got and making a pair of 8 dice attacks into 4 separate targets?
It is, and I think that Widow is another character that uses that really well, because by the end of her first activation, she needs 4 power. If she's able to make 4 pistol attacks, she ends up with 4 power on her. So coming from a 0, you do have to hope you don't daze someone early there, but you obviously are with a controlled builder, right? You can kind of count on having 4 power, assuming you can make all those attacks, which at times can be a big assumption.
Risky. Yeah, it's interesting because I think her pistol makes her incredibly good at reliably getting Doom Prophecy early in the game, right? Because a single shot with it gives her 2 of the 3 power she needs, plus you've got the power phase. So she's really good at getting to the 3 power for Doom Prophecy, but she's really unreliable at generating 4 additional power once she's got Doom Prophecy on her. Makes me think that maybe for this plan to be the ultimate make Black Widow ridiculous plan, she needs to be in Cabal just so she can more reliably generate the power she needs to use that second card.
You might be right, but we lose what Avengers Assemble there, right? But
yes, which is a big deal.
Yeah, but anyway, I liked Widow. I like that synergy with Doom Prophecy. So then I just kind of expanded a little more. Okay, what other Avengers can use Doom Prophecy? A few that are a little crazy, I'll just throw out there. Black Panther makes great use out of it. I know that seems absurd. But again, for similar reasons, he has a way of moving himself that does not require a move action. So he can make 2 very powerful physical strike actions, he gets a push at the end of them, which may be a negative, maybe a positive, and the mantle of the Black Panther really makes sure that those individual strikes hit hard, is what I'll say. He does obviously lose a lot of his physical defense, which obviously can put him in a really bad place. Cap, as a super last option, is actually pretty good with Doom Prophecy. Those shield slams become really strong. They become 10 dice attacks. He obviously suffers from some of the same things as Black Panther. He likes to be defensive, so losing that's a big thing for him. The couple other characters I'll mention is Thor obviously takes it really well. We've seen that a lot with the old Gamma Launch list. I don't think we need to malign that point. And the last one I want to mention is Hawkeye. Is a really interesting one where he's able to keep himself safe pretty far away. He's only going to get 2 attacks. And I know one of the qualifiers I said is being able to make multiple attacks, but you can put some people in some interesting situations where they don't want to give you the fast draw. So maybe they just don't attack Hawkeye for the round. He has the doomed up and he can do some really powerful, again, just the 9 dice range 5 attacks are pretty powerful coming out of Hawkeye, especially when you factor in he can ignore cover and line of sight.
Yes, all good options. So you've got a lot of good Avengers that can use Doom Prophecy, and I like your plan here of building around that. I like what you mentioned with your core 10 because, your core 10 points because Cap and Agent Widow both use it well, and your other option could easily be Hawkeye, who uses it well. And honestly, even Iron Man could use it if he needs to, right? If he's got enough power to fire off rockets. So that all makes sense. But then aside from this core of Avengers, how are you rounding out your squads?
Yeah, so I kind of came back to that initial list, and if one card off of it's good, I think multiple cards will be better. And I didn't love the alternative for Doom, so I ended up jamming Corvus and Proxima into the roster. So at the bare minimum, we're talking a 10-point roster. Corvus and Proxima come in at 17, which is obviously a pretty popular threat value, and then Reality Gem for 18, which doesn't happen too often, but it's there. So I ended up dropping them into the roster. It definitely taxed my team tactics card slots. But the flip side is, like, there weren't a ton of Avengers cards I was taking, right? I was pretty much only taking Avengers Assemble. But I ended up kind of dropping them in. They take 3 roster slots because I do have the Reality Gem. But I've been pretty happy with that list. And even without the gem, I've enjoyed playing Cap, Agent, Hawkeye, Corvus, and Proxima.
Yes, that is a good... I've played that team myself. I think it's excellent. And I really like how good Doom Prophecy is with that team, where you basically have Hawkeye just doing crisis things, right? Being on points, scoring victory points. And then you have Widow and Cap together, and you have Corvus and Proxima together. And whichever side needs the help, you can play Doom Prophecy either on Corvus or on Widow, usually, and get ahead on that side of the table.
Yeah, I think you highlighted it, right? D scenarios is a perfect example of this, right? Where Hawkeye can sit on my close, but still influence most of the board, right? He can still hit both sides if he needs to with a hook shot and a double shot, or, you know, hook, shoot, move, or the inverse, right? So there's some really great options for him. And like you said, I have those two packages that are pretty good, like Hawk and, Cap and Widow is an annoying flank to deal with. They're oddly defensive. Widow has the out of turn movements, and you always have to respect the Doom Prophecy coming in and just doing some damage. Then Corvus and Proxima, right? Their alpha damage is something that you definitely have to account for. It also comes in at 5 characters with 4 activations. So the odds of me holding on to priority or getting priority at some point in the game are pretty good, which was one of your key points into building a Doom Prophecy roster.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think Corvus and Proxima fit so nicely because Corvus is such a good Doom Prophecy target, and together they help you get that priority.
Yeah, now the other thing I'll mention is Corvus and Proxima, I struggled to fit them in at smaller threat games. Obviously, I would have to play out of affiliation if I was going to play them at 15. But I do have, again, to circle back to the familiarity with Avengers themselves, there are multiple 15-point rosters I can kind of throw out there. It's easy for me to toss Thor into this roster, as we kind of talked about before, as someone who is just a really good, strong character. Like, it's hard not to include him. And the Avengers affiliation bonus isn't fantastic for Corvus or Proxima, but they can both make use of it. I mean, Corvus definitely will take a 1 point cheaper Glaive's Edge, right?
I actually really like it on Martial Prowess for Proxima, because she usually gets so close to her targets because of her spear throw and the fact she's dropping off Corvus. I found that Martial Prowess comes up a lot for her and makes her very resilient.
Yeah, that's a great point. Using it for one is definitely powerful, and just those, like, I know you never plan on it, but the random times when you do a couple points of damage with it too, that's never bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I really like this plan, and I like the inclusion of Thor. What other options have you considered for your extra slots, especially in situations where things don't go your way and maybe you can't make the threat value 17, or the crisis isn't going to lend yourself to this 5-character team so well?
So in the initial testing, I actually had Thanos in this roster, and we were doing what everyone makes fun of me for, is playing a dual affiliation roster. I initially had Avengers Assemble Mothership, and then I had Thanos, Corvus, Proxima, and the other Avengers kind of core that we talked about. I ended up determining that wasn't something I wanted to leverage. And the main reason is, like, the times that I would play Black Order were high point games. And that's when Avengers, Corvus, and Proxima kind of shine, in my opinion, is when you do, you know, when you hit that 18 threshold and I have this really solid Avengers package and the Corvus Proxima Reality Gem package. So I didn't see any situation where I was honestly going to play Thanos Black Order. So I freed up that tactic slot. I freed up a character slot by dropping him out. I kind of went back. So right now, just to recap, we have six slots taken, right? We have Corvus, Proxima, the Gem. We have Cap, Agent, and Hawkeye. So I have four open. And the places I went is, I want Vision. I want Black Panther. I want Thor. And they kind of bumped me up to 9 kind of right off the bat. They do some interesting list building things. It gives me an additional options for 17, where I run 3 4s and a 5. It gives me some solid options for 15, where I run 3 4s and a 3. And they're just characters that I have a lot of muscle memory with, and they're all good characters in themselves, right?
Yes, very good. Fear the best, you might say. So I agree with dropping Thanos. It makes me sad, but I think if you couldn't fit in a gem for Thanos in addition to Reality for Corvus, then I don't think it's ever going to be that compelling to run Black Order. And I also see the big problem where I like the idea of having, like, Thanos plus a gem, Corvus with Reality, Proxima, and Hawkeye at 18. But if you already have another plan for 18 that's very similar, it's just redundant, right? It's just you've built in two options, but you can only choose one. So you might as well just make that choice at roster creation and give yourself more flexibility.
Yeah, and also, if I'm building a Doom Prophecy roster, I don't ever want to use that on Thanos, right? So then, for the roster that you kind of outlined, again, I can use it on Hawkeye, but really I only have that one primary target, and Hawkeye kind of takes it as a secondary. I really like the dichotomy of having Widow out there with Corvus as multiple people who can really take that buff and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could have Widow instead of Hawkeye for that Black Order thing, but it's the same point, right? You've got two 18-threat teams that have almost the same characters. You probably don't need to be able to make both of them.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the reason it kind of ended up cutting out. So, again, Thor, Black Panther, and Vision kind of rounded out. And then I had a last slot, and I waffled for a little bit, but the last slot actually ended up being Venom. And this is kind of a nod to the hot take you mentioned. I think I'm going to see a lot of Web Warriors, and Venom is a fantastic answer to kind of... I mean, I'm playing kind of an aggressive, attrition-style BD game anyway, so getting Venom in there is a pretty decent option.
Yeah, I think that's great. The hot take you mentioned, by the way, listeners, is in the last after credit scene for our previous episode, we were sharing our hot takes for season 3 of the TTS League, and I was saying that I think Web Warriors will be the most popular affiliation. Yeah, I think Venom's a great choice. He's a fantastic Avenger, he's great with Doom Prophecy, and he's going to be a good meta core, I expect.
Yeah, and for all those reasons you outlined, right, he synergizes with the theme of the list, which is Doom Prophecy Avengers, right? And I was pretty happy with his inclusion. He's in the few games he makes it into the roster, he definitely fulfills his role of just helping punish spider people. Their defense is just obviously, I mean, this isn't earth-shattering podcast news here, but like their defenses are a lot worse if they can't reroll two or three dice, right?
Yeah, way worse. So I like your list of characters a lot. I think it's real good. I think there's a couple of notable exclusions that I want. I'm just going to rattle them off and then I'll let you speak to them as much as you like. So first point, you don't have a two-threat character. I think this is, you've mentioned you have a plan for every threat value, so I don't feel like it's a problem, but it is forcing your hand somewhat in the style of game you're going to play, which is a very Days and KO focused attrition style game. Secondly, you've missed a lot of characters who are very, very popular, and I don't think that's wrong. I definitely don't think popular characters should be in every roster, but characters like Loki, who is a superb Avenger, Valkyrie and Shuri, very, very popular characters who you probably considered. And then the last one that I would add is you mentioned already that MODOK was a character you think is worth including. You said you had Thor because he was a good 5-point choice to go with your roster of 3 affiliated characters. Why not have MODOK instead?
I'm going to answer your last question first, and then we can kind of circle back to the other ones. Thor came in because, to your point, I don't have a 2-threat. And to me, so I mean, I can add Nebula or Rocket, right? And one of the problems that I have with this roster is a lot of times when I'm jamming a 2-threat in, it's to hit affiliation with the inclusion of Corvus and Proxima.
Right.
And neither of them help me do it personally. So I'll be honest, I haven't thought about MODOK running in here a lot. And the main reason is Avengers don't have a good way to move MODOK around. You've obviously played a lot more MODOK games than I have. If there is a viable way for me to get MODOK into the list, this is one of the things, like, due to the nature of time travel, I have a couple weeks before my list is due. I'll happily try this out and see if it works. Like, would you slot MODOK in over, I mean, you mentioned him over Thor?
Well, the reason I mentioned him over Thor is because you specifically, when I asked you about MODOK versus Thor earlier, you said that you thought MODOK was worth building a list around and Thor wasn't. And then when you said, I have Thor because he's a powerful 5-point option, made me think, why not MODOK? Now, I do understand that Thor has more synergy in your list, right? He's an Avenger, so he's affiliated. He works with Avengers Assemble, and he can be a Doom Prophecy target if necessary. Your list is also taking drop off, and he can drop people off. Although we've not got your tactics cards yet. But I get why he's there. I think he's good. But considering that you thought MODOK was better, maybe you can contort your list to fit him in. I think you're right, though, that the challenge is without the movement buff, he's a little bit less impactful, especially on the first turn. And I'm not sure which teams he would go in. I think that the team he would be best in is for your plan of having the 10-point core of Avengers plus a 5-point character in Gamma Wave, because I think MODOK is superb in Gamma Wave. And although it's nice to be able to teleport him on turn one in Gamma Wave, it's not a must, because he can still advance and shoot somebody as your last activation in the round. And I would consider him just for that reason.
So a couple different points there. Let's start with Thor. I think that MODOK is a more powerful character than Thor. I think Thor does better in a roster that isn't built to support him. I think in a vacuum, Thor brings tools and can be a little more self-sufficient, even if his ceiling isn't as high. I don't feel like I have the tools to kind of make MODOK shine in my roster, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy to test that. And that's kind of the reason I left him off. Again, Thor hitting the affiliation for me is pretty big, but maybe it's not as relevant.
I think you're right. Thor is probably better in your roster. I think they're close anyway, and Thor is definitely getting more. I think MODOK, like if, for example, you were playing in Asgard, obviously you'd have Thor anyway if you're playing in Asgard. But like, for example, with Asgard, you have a couple of things that help MODOK more. You have the leadership, which is so good at stopping MODOK from being staggered and keeping him alive for longer. And you have lots of characters that generate two threat, so you can play tactical analysis and move MODOK up quite easily. In Avengers, you don't have access to those things quite so much. Although tactical analysis could be one of your cards, because you're playing Doom Prophecy, like your cards are going to be at a premium, and you probably can't pick tactical analysis, especially because you're already taking Avengers Assemble, so you have a better version for everyone else on your team already. I see why you don't have MODOK, but I think it's an interesting discussion, and I think a version with MODOK would definitely be viable.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to mention is your gamma shelters point, right? And I know this is a sweeping generalization that isn't always true, right? But if someone's forcing gamma, they're playing Wakanata into me, or they're playing MODOK into me for a sweeping generalization. Mm-hmm. And if they're playing a MODOK list built for gamma into my, I have an Avengers list with MODOK into me, their MODOK is just fundamentally better than mine. I don't want to counter their MODOK with a weaker version. And that's, to me, what I'd be doing, right? I mean, functionally, I get what? Bow to the Will of MODOK costs one less, or Imbecile, right? But that's really the benefit I'm bringing. I guess I have a bodyguard until Cap gets moved away or pushed, or MODOK gets pushed or thrown. So I have a little bit of counterplay there with Cap, obviously, but I didn't feel like bringing a less supported MODOK to a MODOK fight was a way that I wanted to develop.
Yeah, I think that's fair. My counter to that point, we're going real deep on this point, but my counter to it is, I think your answer to MODOK and Gamma is Doom Prophecy, right? Your answer is Agent Widow plays Doom Prophecy and blows them off the table. And you don't need your MODOK to handle their MODOK.
So then my roster would be, like you said, right? Hawk, Widow, Cap, and MODOK. And you know that Widow has a little bit of leverage there because she has the stealth. So she doesn't get obliterated immediately from the enemy MODOK.
Yes, I think it's fine. I don't love Hawkeye and MODOK and Gamma because they're both taking up the same real estate on the table.
So then I don't have another three-point character to hit affiliation.
Yeah, it might be that in your roster and for your team, it's still better to have Thor, because Thor is a great Gamma character as well.
And to your point, just taking what you just said, right, if Widow is my solution to Gamma, then I can just run Hawkeye, Widow, right? Hawkeye's no longer redundant because MODOK's gone.
Yeah.
I have Widow, who could be a MODOK answer with Doom Prophecy coming in on her. And then I have Thor to act as a tertiary beater who runs around and holds things in his little tank here, right?
Yes. I also think, although I've not had a chance to test this very much, I also think Doom Prophecy in general helps a lot against Wakanda Wave, because their plan is usually not to daze and KO you, and their biggest concern is what if you get early dazes and KOs on them, and Doom Prophecy really helps you to swing that.
And that's another, we're going to talk about Team Tactics shards. That's another place where I think Doom shines over Blind Obsession. If you're, and this is, again, kind of, you don't need someone on a podcast to tell you this, if your goal is to hit multiple characters like you would in Wakanda Wave, I want Doom Prophecy. It gives me dice into everyone, as opposed to Blind Obsession, which is only giving me dice into a single target, right? So they're just very different targeted things. Remember, Blind Obsession having a defensive buff can be huge. Getting two additional dice in MODOK is gigantic, right? If you pick MODOK as your defensive buff, right? I'm just going to make an example. Thor taking Blind Obsession into MODOK really changes kind of how the matchup goes, right? Thor is a lot tankier than MODOK Cyanide Blast. But yeah, let's talk about tactic cards a little bit. So obviously we have Doomed. Since we settled on Corvus and Proxima, I have Rocket Boots drop off, so that gives me up to 3 card slots. I've decided that All You've Got is a very powerful card. That gives me up to 4. And then Avengers Assemble kind of puts me at 5. We have 3 more, and there is a lot more cards to cover. Blind Obsession is currently in my 8. I'm not saying it will be for all of time. Field Dressing, because of All You Got, is also in my 8. And then I kind of have this one soft flex slot that, again, I'm so taxed on things, doesn't often make the list. So what do you think should come in for that last slot, Pat? And what do you think are things we should be considering or possibly taking out of the roster?
So there's the trinity of universal cards that are incredibly popular and all help your character survive, right? Medpack, Patch Up, and Brace for Impact. These cards are all great, and you've got none of them.
You are correct. And in my testing, it's often Brace, but I there are definitely games where I miss Medpack, right? Cap loves Medpack or Patch Up, right? And it might actually come down, as much as this pains me, dropping Blind Obsession. I don't know that I need Blind Obsession and Doom Prophecy. But for me, like, if I was in for a penny, I was in for a pound. So I just went like, if I'm going to dice it off the table, I'm going to dice it off the table.
Yeah, I think the duplication of the effect is probably redundant, but it might not be, especially considering that you're taking multiple characters that can use it in your lists. So you have one character use one and one character use another, right? And you can have situations where you're playing split crises, and being able to use both simultaneously on different halves of the table is awesome, because you can have the side where you're going to activate first with priority, you give that character Doom Prophecy, they blow up their side of the table. And on the other side, where you don't have priority, in start of the activation phase, you give that character Blind Obsession, and they benefit from the defensive ability against the primary damage dealer on that side, and then activate later in the round and take out that target.
Yeah, that's actually been how I've been using it in execution, and I've liked it. But again, is that better? Because normally that other side we're talking about is Widow and Cap. Like, would that side just function better with a med pack, right?
Maybe.
And the answer is, like, I don't know. Yeah. But right, both of them are kind of different kinds of survivable, right? But Cap is that kind of character that takes a lot of damage, wants to stay in his flip side for as long as possible. So he definitely benefits from a med pack being in there.
Yes. You've got two characters that are incredibly hard to kill that love healing, right? Which is Captain America on his injured side and Corvus Glaive with Reality Gem. So I would love to have at least one of the two healing cards. And the fact that both of them have a plan to be with the second character makes me like Patch Up as well, but I just don't think you could justify both. But I would strongly consider one of those healing cards. I don't think you need Brace for Impact, because your primary game plan, all of those characters have excellent physical defense, right? Maybe because of side effect of Doom Prophecy, right? But your characters all have 4 physical defense or 3 physical plus a damage reduction. So I just think Brace for Impact is right out.
Yeah, and I think the only reason I'll mention that I think I'm personally leaning more towards Medpack over Patchup is the characters that are escorting those characters usually aren't too high in power for me. Proxima doesn't always have the best power gain, especially if I'm using her for a drop-off maneuver, right? She tends to be move attack as opposed to double attacking, right? And Widow, we talked about it, she has good power generation, but again, I normally want to use that on herself with her individual tactics cards. So I could definitely be talked into a med pack. I agree with you on Brace. Like I said, Brace has actually been the card I've been testing the most, and Brace more and more and more hasn't made it into my 5. Another card that I have been testing, I don't know if you put any thought into it, is No Matter the Cost.
Mm. Yeah, I think No Matter the Cost is good, but I don't see it being that appealing for your team composition. You don't have any characters that particularly synergize with taking damage, right? Maybe you've got Venom, but Venom was like your last slot, right? The character you might not be taking very often. And I just think all of your other options are stronger.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, my logic with it is, like, I like an early Starburst from Proxima.
I mean, that's really tasty. I also like an early Deathblow with Corvus. it can be difficult to get a double death blow turn, but with no matter the cost, it becomes much more manageable.
Yeah, and that's literally the reasons that it was kicking around for me. And what I found with it is it was easy to put that into my 8. It was actually really hard for me to get that into my 5. We just talked about the two characters that take this the best are Corvus and Proxima. So with the roster I've constructed with Corvus and Proxima, we're already Rocket Boots. We're already Drop Off. We're already Doomed Prophecy. Like the other two slots are kind of highly contested.
Super highly contested. Yeah, and the options you have are all more appealing, I think, than no matter the cost.
So are there any other tactics cards you think I should be considering, or mainly just those three?
I think that alone is enough. I think there's a couple of clear options that are calling out for you to be considered, but I think you're right not to consider them. So Execute, right? You've got Corvus and you've got Proxima. I think it's a fine card, but I don't think it's as good as the ones you've chosen. Professionals, right? You've got Hawkeye and you've got Agent Widow, and you're planning to use them in every game. You've even got a bodyguard to keep Agent Widow alive. I still don't think that card is worth taking over the other options you've got. Any other Avengers affiliated cards? No, I don't think it's worth considering over the options you've taken. I like your slots. I think they're well considered.
All right, and then just to kind of wrap us up, we'll real quickly hit on Crisis, and then obviously let us know if you could actually follow along with how the dojo was going. Dojoing lists is something that Pat and I have always talked about putting in the podcast forum. We're just not sure how well it translates. So let us know, social media, Discord if you're a patron. You can actually just leave messages on the Patreon even if you're not a patron. About kind of what you think about this episode. What do you think we could do better? What do you think we could do worse? Do you want more of these episodes, or is this something that you just don't think translates well to podcasting? But to recap real quickly, the roster is Captain America, Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hawkeye, Corvus, Proxima, the Reality Gem, Vision, Thor, Black Panther, and Venom. And then we're functionally running something along the lines of Doomed Prophecy, Drop Off, Rocket Boots, Avengers Assemble, All You've Got, Obsession, Field Dressing, and Med Pack for right now. So what secures, what extracts do you think we should be focusing on for this roster, Pat?
So I'm going to hit this real quickly because I'm never running low on time. First up, I think you need to make sure that you're hitting the threat levels that you want, so that when you win priority, you have a good chance of getting the 17 or 18 that you're really building toward. I think with your particular team composition, the D maps are very, very good for you. But because you've got Captain America and Corvus Glaive and you've got an aggressive focused team, I think Meteors is also good for you. Captain America and Corvus, of course, being good at turning Meteors with their energy defense or with the Reality Gem. So I really like Infinity Formula and Meteors. I think it's interesting to consider what your third secure should be. I think you've got a lot of options there. Do you take a second D Crisis? The problem is Thanos' D Crisis is 16 threat, which doesn't really work well for you. And the Spider-Man Ghost Spider Crisis is 18th threat, which is great, and it's D, which is great, but it requires you to spend power to control the objectives, and your team is not great at doing that because it has a plan for all of its power early on, and it's only got one character that generates more than one power. So what was your third secure choice?
So I was willing to, and this might pain you, almost kind of write off the third secure, because I think the two that you mentioned are the two that I mainly want to kind of leverage the most, if that makes sense. That being said, I think I ended up just tossing in Extremis. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's just something that I have individual characters that kind of do really well on, and I was willing to toss it in. I'm open to changing that, but again, I don't think this is one I'm going to be selecting too often.
I feel like if you're taking Infinity Formula and Meteors, you probably should be taking the Spider Portals, right? Because it is a combination of both of those. So for all the reasons you want one or the other, you probably also want Spider Portals. But I would want to play it a few times first and see how taxing the first turn was on your power consumption.
Yeah, I can definitely get some test games in with that. It does pull me in at 18 threat, which to your point is a threat value I ideally want to play.
The reason I, I think it's cool is because it gives your opponents multiple issues to consider when you're picking secures, right? Because you can choose to play a spread out D crisis every time, which your team is great for if you think your opponent will be bad at it. And if you think they'll be good at it, you can choose to pick a interactive crisis that you're going to be good at. So you have an option either way that you can guarantee that your team is good at either way.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I can add that in for my testing. Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal point. And that's one of the reasons we dojo, right? Is to try to explore and find options. So what about the extracts, Pat?
So the extracts I'm not really sure on. I think the secures are very, very interesting for your team. But I don't really know what kind of extracts you want. Because I think you're playing for aggressive KOs and you've got quite a short range team. So I think something like Spider Infected is straight out. I think in general, you're not scoring very fast. So you probably don't want the faster extracts. Probably not Cosmic Cube. Probably not Evacuation. So it makes me feel like Hammers is probably fine for you. It's probably pretty good, right? Because your characters are good with Hammers. Black Widow is superb with Hammer.
See, I actually dropped Hammer because of the tactics card tax.
Interesting, because you're so your roster is so fundamentally planning to use all of its tactics cards early and for specific reasons. You don't want to have your key turn be foiled by a Hammer.
Yeah, or like a late game turn where I'm like, I would like to Doomed. Oh, that cost me five? Okay. Like on one stage, I'm happy I have two Hammers on a character. The other side is like, it does some really interesting timing issues to when different triggers can kind of go off, right?
Yeah, it also really gets in the way with Rocket Boots drop off, the fact that you're very good at threatening the Hammer, but it's very hard for you to pick up the Hammer and have optimal activations. It's interesting. I think there's an argument for Hammers, especially because it's 18 threat, but I can see why you might not want it. The question is, what do you want instead?
Yeah, so the first one I want to hit on that is probably not initially thought of is actually Mystic Herb. Do I love playing at 15 points? I don't hate it, but I can't fit the Corvus package in efficiently there. But if I can play Herbs at a higher point value, it does allow me to kind of split like we normally would. I can send a team to the Vessel, a team to the Pickup. It's a slower scenario if I can stop the Herb Carrier midway through, which, because my team is so beady focused, I can usually do. And then I have some decent Herb Carriers on my own, and I can do some interesting things with them. Not ideal, definitely, but I can definitely... Widow can do some interesting things with her ability to squirt away from people. And then you know, Herb does add that additional die to physical attacks, right, which is a much more junior version of the Hammers. But both Corvus and Widow can make pretty good use of that in the terms they end up with Doom Prophecy. So for right now, I have Herb in there as one of my starting ones. Again, I don't love the 15 points, but I don't hate it. But I do like the scenario with the roster.
Yeah, I think it's a good choice to fight against the really fast scenario-focused teams because your team is not going to score a lot of victory points quickly. And you're right, your characters have more synergy with actually carrying the Herb and benefiting from its effects than most rosters would.
Yeah, so one of the other ones is Alien Ships. So I'm not sure if this should be in there, but I like playing at the 20 threat. I think my roster scales really well up to 20. There's all sorts of different ways we can build it out for that. Power Core can be, as you know, fast, but it's not as fast as some of the other ones. There's definitely some counterplay involved with it. So I got ships in there. Again, I'm not married to these choices. I could definitely be mutable on any ones. That's another one that made the list for me personally. And then the last one to kind of wrap up was Skrulls.
Interesting. So you've gone for both of the crises, Skrulls and ships, which are functionally the same crisis, right? That they have one high priority extract that you get by rolling crits. You obviously have the reality gem, so you're a bit better at getting that than average, though by no means guaranteed. Is that the main reason why you've opted for these, or do you think your team is good at these for other reasons?
So I definitely think it's a bit of a holdover, and it's one of the reasons that I'm super not set on any of these. If you remember, initially Thanos was in the roster for testing, and because of Thanos' reality gem, I was thinking I could maybe bully scenario with Thanos on there. They both came in. Then I never really went back and pivoted on them heavily to the new roster. I don't think I'm inherently bad at any of them, but I don't think I'm good at them. And there might be something I'm better on, and that's you know, it's one of the reasons we're talking here today.
Yeah, I think Black Order is awesome at ships and swells because they have Reality Gem on either Corvus or Thanos. And then when one character, it doesn't matter whose team they're on, as soon as any character picks up the extract, then you can move one of your beaters from one side of the table to the other with Mothership to focus all of your force on that area and quickly get control of the extract and keep it. So I can see why you had that as a holdover when you had Mothership and Thanos in your roster. I think now it's fine, but I don't think it's great. And especially because you also have Herb as a slow option, I think you're kind of locking yourself in with three extracts that are all slow. You're locking yourself into a lot of slow games whenever you or your opponent gives you extracts. And although your team is good at slow games, I don't know if you want to force yourself to do that. I don't know if you need three slow options.
So what's a quicker one you think we could toss in? I know you mentioned hammers. I mean, the other one that came to mind is evacuation.
Yeah, evacuation is hyper fast. I think it's okay, but because you have so many plans for using your power with tactics cards early, I'd be a little bit concerned about it. I'd be a little bit worried.
Not in there too, right? Your opponent can also sneak ahead in that pretty easily on you, right? If you go to focus, you're giving them so much power, right?
Yeah, in some ways, if you're not generating enough power, evacuation can punish you for taking people out. And Black Widow is a great example of this, right? Because Black Widow generates static amounts of power with her pistol. It doesn't scale with Doom Prophecy. She can easily end up in a situation where she dazes a target, but then can't evacuate the civilian. And then if they retaliate and get it back, they have enough power where they can evacuate it. It can be even worse, of course, because you can only carry one civilian at a time. So you can end up in a situation where you're dominating a side, but civilians are just sitting around unclaimed because you have no one that can carry them. And your opponent gets up from being dazed and just immediately evacuates the civilian. So I think it would be fine, but I definitely don't think it gives you an advantage. I think it's just, at best, it's kind of medium for you.
Yeah, so real quick, I think Spider-Infected Invade Manhattan, I think is just horrible for me. I don't want that move to ever happen, and you should definitely count on that happening, so I think that's right out. Struggle for the Cube is another one, and for me, I think Struggle for the Cube was too fast. I don't know what your thoughts on there, but I want to play something that. Then my route tends to be pretty good with its power. I tend to have good checkpoints of when I can use different cards and power. I don't necessarily need that additional power coming in from them. So, I mean, we're going through these real fast. It might end up being hammers, which you kind of initially mentioned, right?
I do kind of like hammers. I like that it has the same board setup as the D, which you can, well, it's kind of irrelevant actually because you're never picking both at the same time. I like hammers. I think I would probably pick hammers over either scrolls or ships because I don't think your team especially wants to force that kind of crisis. And then the one that I would cut would depend on whether or not you think your 20-threat roster is better or worse than your 17-threat roster.
I think I would rather personally cut the 17 for the 18. So I think I would cut scrolls to fit in. Hammers is my initial gut, but again, I'll do some more testing on that.
So your crisis would be for extract, Brakandan Herb, hammers, and alien ships. And for secures, it would be Extremis, consoles, meteors, and spider portals.
That sounds right. Yep.
Yeah, sounds good. This team sounds cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm excited to play it. Thanks so much for kind of going through this roster building again. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Is this kind of something that you think has a benefit to you? Before we wrap up, I guess, Pat, what do you think the strength of this team composition are?
So I like the fact that it is really hard hitting. I like the fact that the characters are all pretty resilient and have a good amount of independent power as well as being able to support and synergize with each other. I love how you have planned your tactics cards with the characters so closely. So I think the synergy level is really, really high. I suppose that immediately leads me onto the weakness, which is, as always with very synergy-dependent things, it's probably a little bit prone to things going wrong, right? We talked already about how so much of your plan is around Doom Prophecy. If you don't have priority, you're going to have some really awkward turns. And if your characters are out of position or being controlled a lot, then you might find things quite problematic. Like your very precisely calibrated machine might stop working. But I think your team is really strong, and I think it's in with a really good shot to do well.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say for anyone considering playing this roster on your own is my solution to almost anything with this roster is to just throw dice at it, and then sometimes that just doesn't work. So,
definitely.
Be ready for the dice to come around on you, and you can't be too upset because there are definitely games where it's going to roll hot, and there are going to be games where you throw 10 dice with Corvus and you don't see a wild. So it's going to happen. Just be like mentally and physically prepared for it. I've enjoyed playing it so far, and I'll definitely let everyone know kind of how it does in the Tabletop Simulator League. So thanks for working through the dojo with me, Pat. This is something that Pat and I do off podcast a lot. It's just kind of something, again, we wanted to surface here. I don't know why I felt the need to mention this the fourth time. In the after credits of our Patreons, we are going to look at additional things we think are strong enough to build our roster around. Those kind of include the ones we kind of mentioned earlier and some additional ones we're tossing in there. You can check that out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost if you're not already a patron. And again, patrons, thank you all so much. We do want to take a moment and thank everyone involved in the Tabletop Simulator League for setting up, organizing, and running it. We definitely know that's no small task. You still have a couple days to sign up for that. Full information can be found in the information for this podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are that you dare to dream really do come true.